Hello and welcome to the Money and Banking Law Podcast with Joe Sylvia, brought to you by the global law firm of Duane Morse. I'm your host, Joe Sylvia. I'm a former Federal Reserve lawyer who represents banks, fintechs, and other clients on M&A, payments, and regulatory matters at Duane Morse. I'm also a core member of our banking, fintech, and digital assets and blockchain practices. The goal of the Money and Banking Law Podcast is to inform and educate our clients and friends on both the fundamental concepts and structure of the banking ecosystem, as well as critical developments in the law and regulation of money and banking. On this episode, we are talking about the recent issuance of the Federal Reserve Board's Statement of Supervisory Operating Principles. So I felt compelled to put together a short episode on this statement of supervisory operating principles because I found it quite interesting. It's a short document. It's only three pages long, and the language that's used is what's really interesting to me because it's not the traditional Fed speak. The statement from a few weeks ago comes on the heels of an announcement back in August of 2025 related to Vice Chair for Supervision Mickey Bowman's priorities and operating principles. And the focus or the goal of the changes in the statement of supervisory operating principles was and is to strengthen supervision by focusing it on identifying and taking timely proportionate action as early as possible to eliminate the most important risks threatening the safety and soundness of banking organizations. Obviously, a worthy cause and not all that different than the way that we think about it currently. However, the last sentence of the first paragraph says, these changes represent a significant shift from past operating practices. So then we get into the really good stuff. So this brief memo that was issued at the end of October 2025 provide some what they call directional guidance on the changes that the vice chair expects the Fed to undertake, and particularly the division of supervision and regulation. As the memo indicates, I want to walk through the memo because it's kind of fascinating to me as a former Fed lawyer that this shift in priorities, this shift in focus is occurring, and with kind of the gravity at which it's occurring. So the memo indicates staff should not assume that our current or past operating practices should continue going forward. Staff should continually consider whether their work, conclusions, messaging, and other actions are aligned with the specific changes outlined in the statement, and more broadly with this overall shift in direction and posture. So as we walk through some of the notes that are given in this statement for the Division of Supervision and Regulation, really the exam teams, first thing that I noticed is really that the expectation now is for examiners to prioritize their attention on a bank's material or bank holding company's material financial risks. So moving on through the statement, it says that staff should not become distracted from the priority of focusing on the material financial risks. They shouldn't get distracted by devoting excessive attention to processes, procedures, and documentation that do not pose material risk to a firm's safety and soundness. They indicate that they will be amending SR 1313 to reverse the directive to eliminate supervisory observations. And the focus here is that the goal is that this will make supervision more effective by allowing examiners and staff to focus again on the material financial risks. So very clear shift in the way that things have been done in the past with respect to the supervision of banks and bank holding companies by the Federal Reserve. The next chunk of information we get is talking about how exam teams deal with leveraging other examination staff from either another federal banking agency or a state banking supervisor. The statement indicates that GLBA, the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act, requires examiners to rely to the maximum extent possible on the exams and other supervisory work by the primary state or federal banking supervisor of those bank subsidiaries, other than the member state, state member banks, which of course are primarily supervised by the Fed. And so the next bullet says Fed supervisory staff should not conduct their own examination of such depository institution subsidiaries unless it is impossible for the Federal Reserve to rely on the exam of that bank's primary state or federal supervisor. Impossible is a strong word. This impossibility standard, this statement goes on, might be met if such a bank's supervisor does not share sufficient information about the bank for the Federal Reserve to rely on the exams or supervisory work. It doesn't raise to the level of impossibility just because the Fed's exam work is different than maybe the other federal banking agency's exam work or a state supervisor's exam work. We see discussion about tailoring supervision based on the size, complexity, and systemic importance of a bank or a banking organization, and focusing the heavier resources, of course, on larger institutions. That's not necessarily a new topic or a new issue. It continues with interesting commentary about examiners and supervisory staff need to change the way they decide whether an MRA or MRIA, which is a matter requiring attention, or a matter requiring immediate attention, excuse me, or other requirements in an enforcement action can be terminated because the underlying deficiency has been fully remediated. So here in this discussion, we kind of see a perspective that we want to address MRAs more effectively, more efficiently, and if they have been remediated, let's remove them and not take an extravagant amount of time gathering additional information, determining additional supervisory issues or metrics to look at, and so forth. So the focus is for the examiners to issue the MRA if it's necessary, review the remediation, and once it's remediated, remove the MRA. And in fact, remove it without delay. Statement says that examiners and staff should not conduct additional reviews, or what they call capstones, on issues that are not directly related to any of the deficiencies identified in one of these enforcement actions, or on risks that are not a material threat to a firm's or a bank's safety and soundness before they terminate the enforcement action. What this says to me is that the enforcement actions should be specific and targeted if they're needed, and that when the specific remediation, the targeted remediation, takes place and is confirmed, those enforcement actions should be removed without delay and without giving supervisors some kind of ability to look into issues that are ancillary or not directly related to the issues that led to the potential enforcement action. So again, a more targeted approach, more focus on material issues, and again, more focus on material financial risks and safety and soundness risks. On supervisory ratings, the statement says that the ratings should accurately reflect an institution's financial condition and manage material financial risks. It says the management and risk management components of both the CAMELS and RFICD ratings should not be given more weight than the other components in determining a firm's composite rating. They should be considered, each of the component ratings should be considered and weighed based on the materiality to the institution. So this is interesting. This is a departure from where things have been in the past, but there has been a significant focus on the management component of the ratings when considering the overall composite rating under CAMELS or the RFI system. So this is a departure. It is interesting that they're indicating that this should not be given more weight, but rather to focus on weighting the factors or weighting the ratings based on the materiality to the bank or the banking organization. The standard for issuing enforcement actions or MRAs based on threats to safety and soundness is going to be changing, and they're going to be issuing more specific guidance in this area as well. But they say basically that MRAs and MRIAs should prioritize deficiencies that could have a material impact on a firm's financial condition. So again, the focus is on the financial condition, the safety and soundness, less so on procedures, processes, documentation, policies, and so forth. Rather, focus on material impact to the firm's or the bank's financial condition. The statement goes on to say that staff will no longer be permitted to communicate MRAs and MRIAs in vague or overbroad language, basically. So they're saying, again, we need targeted enforcement actions with targeted remediation expectations tailored to the materiality of the circumstance, the materiality of the impact to the financial condition of the institution, and so forth. But the language, again, is quite interesting to me. It says, instead, examiners and supervisory staff will be required to communicate MRAs and MRIAs with sufficient specificity so that a person of ordinary intelligence can readily know what the deficiency is underlying an MRA or MRIA and what a non-deficient state would be. It indicates that there should be meaningful dialogue, and the examination staff should promptly respond to banks' questions to provide clarity when it's requested and invite feedback as to whether a particular MRA or MRIA is justified, or whether there's some lack of clarity around the expectations or what the remediation expectations ultimately look like. Finally, it indicates that the board's interpretation of the statutory standard for issuing enforcement actions based on an unsafe or unsound practice will also be changing. The statement indicates that there is, again, work underway to clarify the interpretation of this statutory standard for issuing enforcement actions. So there's quite a bit that's implicated by this statement and change in the direction of the supervisory function and priorities of the Federal Reserve. So what this tells me is that the focus, again, is going to be on material financial risks. The focus is going to be on issuing enforcement actions that are targeted, specific, and clear. And clear not only in terms of what went wrong, but clear in terms of what the expectations are for remediation and supervisory expectations going forward. I think generally good things for financial institutions to be able to have more clarity around the enforcement actions and what needs to be done to correct things. It's just very interesting to me that the Fed put out this statement, again, not Fed speak, the use of language like impossible or using an impossibility standard with respect to using other agencies' examinations and reports, clarifying standards that have been in place for quite some time around enforcement actions and expectations, using terms like being able to communicate to someone of ordinary intelligence so that they can readily know what the deficiency is and what a non-deficient state would be. So just the language that was used tells me, again, there's a different focus at the Fed with respect to the supervision function, and remains to be seen how this actually plays out. There's a couple of different pieces of guidance that we'll be seeing in the near future on supervision from the Fed, which will give us hopefully a lot of clarity around what their expectations are and how this overall supervision function may be changing and what these operating priorities actually look like in practice. It may, in fact, take a bit of time before we really see and learn from actual examinations and enforcement actions being implemented to see how this plays out. But I think suffice to say, it's a welcome message from the banking industry that the Fed is going to be focusing a little bit more of their supervisory priorities around material financial risks, material safety and soundness risks, and less so on some of what I'll call the soft challenges or soft risks, whether it's operational, documentation-wise, policy, procedure-wise. They're shifting it a little bit away from that to focus more on what they're calling these material financial risks and the risks to safety and soundness of the organization. So again, really interesting three-page document. I think everyone should read it if you haven't yet, especially obviously if you're in a banking supervisory capacity, you represent banks or anything in between. So with that, I'll conclude and end for today. It's a short episode, but I thought it was a particularly interesting topic and statement of supervisory operating principles that was issued. So I felt compelled to bring it to everyone's attention if you hadn't seen it already. If you have any questions from any of our episodes, please reach out to me at jsylvia@duanemorris.com or your favorite Duane Morris lawyer. And finally, please be sure to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening in. Stay tuned for new episodes coming soon, brought to you by Duane Morris and the Money and Banking Law Podcast with Joe Sylvia.